Hello, everyone, and welcome to Note to Scene, a music news podcast covering everything from pop punk to metalcore. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, where every week we discuss and debate all the biggest news stories in the music scene. Find more episodes of the show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notescene@gmail.com. So much to talk about this week. Big news from Bless the Fall and Census Fail. But first, we're going to talk about 30 Seconds to Mars, former mainstream emo kings who are back in a big way in 2018. All right, let's go. Now I'm very excited to get into this 30 Seconds to Mars story, Tyler. But it looks like we got some drama going on in the metal world that we just got to hit real quick. So, what exactly is happening with Of Mice and Men and Code Orange right now? We got some band beef.
Well, I think it's more so just Code Orange on their pedestal against anything that has ever been seen. But basically, what happened is that after the Grammys, Of Mice and Men's guitarist Alan Ashby sent out a tweet
Can we just
saying,
pause and bring up the fact that Code Orange were nominated for a Grammy, which is just so fucking stupid? Continue.
I mean, it is quite hilarious in and of itself, but this thing I think is even more hilarious. So, Alan sent out a tweet that said, "If Code Orange should have won a Grammy, then Norma Jean should have won a Grammy back in the day," with a bunch of question marks. It's worded weird, but you get the gist. Like, he's saying that everyone who was rooting for Code Orange should have also said that Norma Jean should have got nominated for either their debut or their sophomore album, because the new Code Orange album rips a lot of Norma's riffs, which is funny because back in 2002 and 2005, everyone was saying that Norma was just ripping off Botch, but that's a whole different conversation. So Alan sends out this tweet. Code Orange replies with two words. They told him to eat shit. And after that, it just kind of escalated. Ash Avildsen, the owner of Sumerian Records,
Gotta have
tweeted.
Ash. It's not a fight unless the owner of Sumerian Records decides to interject himself.
He's
It's
always
not a
got to,
steam battle unless Ash
yeah.
has just gotta pop up.
He's just always got to insert himself into any conversation that has to do with heavy
These
music.
aren't even his fucking bands. They're not
He
on his
has
label.
nothing. He thinks he lives on this really high pedestal in the music industry, but I mean, his label is in the shittiest position it has ever been in. So,
You mean
what?
he thinks people? You mean he thinks people are going to watch his movie
I mean,
because it
he
has
thinks
Andy
he's a
Black in it?
filmmaker now. He thinks he's a
Devil's
filmmaker,
with
yeah.
Devil's Night or whatever the fuck the shit's
American
called.
Satan, yeah, Devil's Night.
Yeah,
Same thing. So,
I'm sure Ben Bruce can act. I can't wait to see that.
right, right. So Ash tweets, "Norma Jean's first album, Bless the Martyr and Kiss the Child, is one of the greatest heavy records to utilize dissonant chords with metal slash hardcore riffs. And Code Orange does it in an awesome way on their album Forever. Not sure if Alan's intention with his comment, but I do know there's way too much segregation in heavy music." So those first two Norma records are fantastic. They're not ripping off Botch, and if you say that they're due, they did Botch better than Botch did Botch. This Code Orange album, if you listen, I can't remember what the fourth song on the album's called, but there is a heavy dissonant chug pattern, which sounds pretty cool, but it is just ripped right from Oh God, the Aftermath. So Alan replies, he says, "Right, it wasn't a diss, just pointing out the similarity in my opinion of music Grammy situation, but now I must eat shit." And of course, Telly Smith of the failing band The Word Alive had to interject his opinion, saying, "For what it's worth, I took it as a nod to at Norma Jean band and how awesome they were and have been for many years, but completely agree with Ash. Too much segregation when we're supposed to be the tight-knit." Of course, he's gonna say heavy music should be a more tight-knit community because that's what he needs to prop up his failing band.
Yeah, no, Telly at this point Stop being fake, dude. It's the fake positivity. It's real. Everybody knows who you
so
really are, man.
So disingenuous. And then to wrap up the whole thing, Alan replied to a fan who said that Code Orange tweet was mean. He said, once while watching them, Code Orange, side stage, their bass player threw his bass, then screamed at Philip Mansala, which is a Mice and Men's drummer, to get him a new one.
That's the bassist, I believe.
Oh, really?
Drummer's
Tino's yep, the drummer. Got him confused. Yeah. My bad. So he said, so I got to stick up for my dude. That was whack. And Code Orange, yeah, in typical hardcore elitist fight me fashion, tweeted back, keep talking.
You know, we've been saying fuck this band for a long time. Fuck Code Orange. I'm just going to say it again. They're not good at music. Like, you talk about them ripping off Norma. I had to go back and listen to hear, to find that, just because of how bad they are at doing it. They're not even good at ripping off Norma. They're just this, like, slog of a band to listen to. There's nothing there. They just have this fucking attitude and this cockiness. They don't sell any records, you know. It's just this hardcore elitist group who like them, but haven't the hardcore elitists already disowned them? I mean, it's like, who even likes this band anymore? You know what I mean? Their major label is going to realize that this, Roadrunner is going to realize this is the biggest mistake of a signing they've ever made, and this band needs to be dropped.
Yeah, as soon as Roadrunner realizes that they're never going to make any substantial monetary returns from this band, it's all going to be over and we can finally forget about them. But yeah, like, back when this band was called Code Orange Kids, they had hype within hardcore. And
they
then
had
they,
hype.
And then when they actually started getting momentum and becoming a bigger band, hardcore abandoned them. And now, now that they're touring with Deftones and all these cred bands, every hardcore kid who dissed them is now backing them. Fuck hardcore.
Well, yeah,
they're
getting all these opportunities now because they're on a major label.
They're on
which, you know, God knows how that happened. And, you know, I don't want to waste too much time talking about Code Orange because they just, in a year, it's going to be over. We won't have to deal with it anymore.
Sure,
but
so.
Shouts to Mice and Men, you know, Alan, for putting them on blast, because somebody had to do it finally. I mean, I know you didn't put them on blast, but. And any shots anyone takes at this band, I am all for.
And
they need their egos put in check.
Shouts to someone else bringing Norma Jean back into the conversation, man. It's one of my favorite bands
of all
time. Yeah,
you love that shit.
Yeah, those are the OGs right there.
Hey, man, they gave Under Oath the lift, you know? I mean, you're indebted
totally
to them for that, you know?
Absolutely, and I'll ride for Oh God, the Aftermath till the day I die is a fantastic record.
Okay, well, we got to move into our main story this week, which is 30 Seconds to Mars. The band released a new single called Dangerous Night. This follows their smash single, Walk on Water, which is also from their expected fifth album, which should be out this year. It is yet to be titled. Funny, never thought we'd really be leading this show with 30 Seconds to Mars. You know, they're just kind of one of those bands that just disappear. But here we are. And have you had a chance to listen to Dangerous Night yet, Tyler Sharp?
I have, and I have a lot of thoughts on it. So you could kind of break this song down into two different sections. We have your verses and your chorus. The verses, I think, are absolutely fantastic. They're dark. They build a crazy amount of tension. But the lead up that they give towards the pre-chorus and the chorus doesn't match where the song climaxes for me. It doesn't deliver the hook that's supposed to, you know, hook me in. That's the whole point of a hook. I compare it to kind of like a roller coaster. So the verses are when you're going up for that first, you know, the first drop, basically. And only on this roller coaster, there's no drop. You just get to the top and it just stays at the same level. But you see some crazy cool scenery. It's not a bad chorus, but it definitely could have been better. So it's still a good song. I kind of think this should have dropped in the summer, and I'm almost kind of bummed that obviously they waited to drop this because of the success that Walk on Water had. So I'm almost kind of bummed that it had so much success, because this could have came out, you know, at the end of last summer, or they could have waited until this spring to do it, because I feel like, you know, this is a song that you spend summer nights having play in the background going wherever.
With the girl,
man. I mean, this is that's what it's all about, right? So,
or guy,
yeah,
or whoever.
Exactly. It's about falling in love, and I think this song does a good job at displaying that aesthetic. I'm at a 7 out of 10. Where are you at with it, Matt?
Oh man. Okay. So I love this fucking song, Tyler Sharp. to me, this is just like a perfect love song, and like we haven't gotten one of those in a while. Lyrically, it's so emo, like, and even melodically, there's this emo-ness to this. Like, to me, this sounds like old 30 Seconds to Mars again, but wrapped like in this EDM chrysalis. You know what I mean? It's like the melody of an old 30 Seconds to Mars song, but in the new wave of EDM sonically. And I really like that. It's funny. It kind of reminds me of Taylor Swift's Ready for It. Like the way the verses are so just kind of stompy and hit you hard. And then that chorus just kind of bumps up there like that and goes sky high and kind of soars. So I thought it was an interesting comparison. I was like, was that on purpose? I don't know. But it was just really cool, like, to hear Jared Leto. Like, he still has it. He sounds so fucking good on this song. And you just forget, you know, it had been so long since we heard him. But you mentioned you didn't necessarily like the change up between the chorus and the verse. Mm-hmm. It just didn't quite fit for you.
Yeah, I don't like the disconnect. I feel like there was...
Okay.
They're kind of like two different songs here, and I feel like you can take the song as a whole apart into two different sections.
Right, which is, it's kind of a similar conversation we had about Ready for It, when you think about
it. Yeah, that's true.
When that, and I don't know why, maybe Ready for It kind of primed me for this sort of song, but I love that part. Like, I just love how you're in this EDM thump and the percussion just busts you right into that chorus, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got this, you just, Jared Leto's vocals are sky high over this chiming emo guitar that's way down there, you know what I mean? And I really like it, man. I really like this song. It sounds like 30 Seconds to Mars again for me. Remember how in the last album, like, they were kind of trying to be U2 a little bit?
A little bit, but I feel like they captured that sky high intention much better on City of Angels.
Yeah, I just, to me, like that album sounded like they were trying to be U2. This sounds to me like they're trying to be U2 again, but like when U2 were good. And mixing it well with the 30 Seconds to Mars aesthetic. You know, this is an emo love song. And to me, this is like their best song since 2009. Like, I got it up there with like The Kill, Kings and Queens from Yesterday,
wow.
This is War.
Wow.
This is one of my favorite 30 Seconds to Mars songs. And this is officially my favorite song of 2018 so far.
Wow. Yeah. So if you want to keep the U2 analogy going, I mean, this is kind of what U2 should be writing at this point. If they really wanted to make, because that band's pissed that they can't have a hit right now. Bono
you go all the way back to With or Without You. Yeah,
right,
U2,
exactly.
Like, they thrive on emotion. That's an emotional song. And just like this one, this is an emotional song. It gets you, you know?
Exactly. So if they could swallow some pride and dabble more in the electronic realm and, you know, gasp, abandon the guitars and stuff and traditional drums and traditional rock song structures, I think this is what they should be doing. So you're totally not wrong with the U2 comparison. But yeah, this song is a good song. Absolutely. But I think it could have been a lot better.
I don't know if I gave my score, but it's 8.5 out of 10.
Eight? Okay. 8.5.
8.5.
Okay.
Yeah. I really like it lyrically too. Just, you know, that I like that pre-chorus when he just bursts into it, you know, What a Dangerous Night to Fall in Love. And I love how when it goes into the chorus, he kind of just drags it like geniusly with that, you know, are we going to cross the line? You know, and then he wraps it up and kind of circles back around to What a Dangerous Night to Fall in Love. I just think it kind of completes the loop as a chorus in a really perfect song way structurally.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to be this impressed by 30 Seconds to Mars or get this kind of song from them at this point.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, you know, you have night in the title and there's kind of like this dichotomy between the verses and the choruses of night and day. The verses are very dark night and the chorus and pre-chorus is very uplifting and it's during the day.
Right.
So if you like that, if you like that kind of comparison within a song, then you'll probably love this. But it's funny, Walk on Water, they just submitted it to Top 40 Radio not that long ago, and it's starting to climb. It's at number 37 right now.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to that success in a minute, but it's almost like you can see stars twinkling in the sky when you listen to this song. It's so over the top in its love songness. You know what I mean? It's quite ridiculous, but I think it'll make a really good anthem for, those first, those couples who are deciding whether or not they're going to take the dive,
For sure.
Love can be dangerous,
Yeah.
and that's kind of the message of the song. Did you see the band performing the song on Colbert?
I did.
Where they Late Night with Colbert, where they actually debuted it?
Right. Yeah. So I didn't see it live on TV, but I did see the YouTube video and revisited it for a couple times, because anyone who's seen this saw the little bit of interactive cinematography that they did with this, and it was cool for Late Night. I'll give them that. I'm pretty over Messiah Complex, Jared Leto. I can't take it that much at this point. I mean, that dude really, he thinks he's Bono, the YouTube comparisons continue. You want to talk about someone?
That beard isn't helping,
is it? No, not at all. And, you want to talk about someone who may or may not be singing. I don't know, man. That sounded way too good to me.
It did sound good. It's funny about the Messiah Complex thing, because I feel you on that. I feel you. But I'm loving Jared Leto more now, because I just feel like he doesn't have to be doing this for us. He's a massive star. He played the fucking Joker, and yet he's coming back and giving us songs like this, and I'm just really fucking appreciating it. You know what I mean? It's weird. So I'm kind of I'm back on Jared Leto again. I'm messing with him again. It's weird.
Yeah. There's definitely something in the fact that you're right. He doesn't have to be doing this, because he doesn't need to be in order to have money, because he has money. But I think he wants to do it because it puts him on an even higher pedestal than just being an actor.
The music industry
now.
The music industry is over. There's no money to be made here. Hollywood, he's making $15 million a movie. This entire album will come out, and they'll be lucky to break even, with the way the music industry goes. It's
true.
He's not doing this for the money at all. Do you think does he genuinely just want to sing it again?
I think it's leaning more towards the narcissism level. He's more front and center stage here, and he really truly has control over everything in this mode of entertainment.
So the performance was shot by a robot, which I would recommend you check this performance out, because it's pretty unique. I thought it was pretty cool, just the visuals of it and the sort of high contrast and the quality of the shots and the movement of the camera. And it was a very unique take on a late night performance, which, some of these late night performances have been getting kind of stale. So I was pleased to see them kind of mix it up there.
Yeah, definitely. And did you see Colbert, the camera panning to him towards the end?
I read about that, but I missed that. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's pretty funny. He's dancing. Yeah. The camera looks at him for 2 seconds. Yeah. He's got a stupid face on. It's pretty funny.
I saw he was stoked after, when they got off. He seemed like he liked the song.
Yeah, I wonder if some of these Hollywood figures kind of see Jared Leto as more of a star in his actor right, and them booking his band is just a way to get to him.
a lot of people don't even know 30 Seconds to Mars know him as an actor. He's done, his acting career is just massive. You know what I mean? There's just lyrically, there's just a lot I like on the song. I like the verse, I am a man on fire, you are a violent desire. Just the way he's emoting in those lyrics, I'm just all about it. I really dig it.
Yeah, and I love the tension that those verses build up. It feels like I'm listening to, Hurricane again or Kings and Queens. It feels like sophomore album 30 Seconds to Mars again, where we get those really massive songs. But kind of loses me on the chorus. But I'm excited. I'm excited for this album.
So you brought up Walk on Water, and there's just so much, there's so many interesting things to talk about in comparison to that song, because that song came out and is nothing like this at all, right? Walk on Water is would you agree with me? It's like their Imagine Dragons kind of shot,
A little bit, yeah.
They're going for that kind of aesthetic, and it's their sports anthem.
Right.
And it was a huge fucking success. It was number one on the alt radio charts. And that was crazy. Who saw that coming? They weren't able to get even a number five, I think, on the last record. I think City of Angels got up to number eight on alt, maybe. And that was a mild success of a single. This just bam, right to number one. Like, who knew 30 Seconds to Mars were going to do that, you know, just out the gate like that. It's almost like, why after they had, you got to wonder why after they had success with a song like Walk on Water, do you release such a different, this is such a different thing, Dangerous Night. You know what I mean? Like, this is such a switch up that even though I love this song, I don't know that it's going to do as good as Walk on Water, because Walk on Water is just seems to be the flavor of what people want right now. You know, that sports anthem, Imagine Dragons kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was, Walk on Water was crazy to see, because like you said, it shot to number one on alt radio. Plus, it was inside the top 10 on rock radio, and it was starting to gain on top 40 at the exact same time. So
It's their believer.
It was a sight to see, because like you said, I sure as hell never saw that coming from 30 Seconds to Mars in 2017. And now as we go into 2018, I don't know what to expect from this song. I will say that it fits more of an EDM mold, I would, as far as like pop radio goes. You know, like I was talking to you off the show for a second about this song. It remind the verses and the opening of it kind of reminds me of like a Bass Nectar song almost in a weird way, which it gives me EDM vibes. So I almost wonder if this could just go straight to top 40 radio and not even deal with alt or rock.
It might almost be a better fit for the top 40 radio, because it's so EDM heavy and it's not anthemic like Walk on Water is, you know?
I don't think it could ride on alt radio, and I sure as hell don't think it could ride on rock radio.
It's so gushy, Shameless emo though. Like, I wonder, you know, it's so love song. It's so just like, you know, puke I want to throw up, but this is beautiful. I just wonder. I wonder. It's an interesting move for the band. Like, what I wonder too also is, with all that success of Walk on Water as a single, why don't we have the album announcement yet? Why wait? Like, what do you think's going on? Like, you know, you would think you've had that song burning at number one.
Right.
Let's announce the album while we're at maximum exposure. But instead they haven't, and now they've thrown us this curveball with this much more emo EDM song.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
We see this a lot with top 40 superstars, you know, like we'll see a single get released, let it burn. If it doesn't stick, you release another single right away. If that one sticks, you let it burn for as long as possible. Then you drop another one, etc. Maybe you get to four and then you announce the album. I just think that they're using this tactic. I thoroughly believe that the album's been done for a long time and they're just messing around at this point because they have the opportunity to. I almost wonder if Dangerous Night wasn't even on the album when they finished it. I wonder if post Walk on Water goes to number one, they're like, okay, we have this opportunity. What can we do here? What can we do to throw at the dartboard and see if this sticks?
Right.
So, I mean, the album could already be different than what they originally had in mind and what they originally finished in the studio, just because they can now.
Yeah, it's funny. And if they made that move, it's just, this song feels so, it just doesn't feel very cynical to me. It feels like something like almost like they knew their fans are going to like and appreciate, you know? Like,
I mean, give the kids what they want, right?
Yeah, it's just, whereas Walk on Water, you could see a more cynical angle. I like that song. It's a good song, but you could see kind of what they're trying. There's an agenda to that song,
for
I think.
Sure.
You know, where there's no real agenda with this one other than just, I think, to make 30 Seconds to Mars fans happy and Jared's having a good time with it. But Beautiful Lie, obviously, their biggest record probably, you know, went platinum, did 67,000 copies first week, went gold, which that was a huge success at the time. And then Love, Lust, Faith, Dreams comes out. This is kind of the first time the band stumble. It does 53,000 copies first week still, but it doesn't go gold. I think it's only gone on to sell like 290,000 copies total. City of Angels was a decent hit, you know, but it wasn't as nearly as big of a hit as songs from their past. You know, it was not as, doesn't touch songs like The Killer, Kings and Queens, or From Yesterday, or This Is War. So it kind of puts the band in an interesting position. Like, their last album was their least successful one, and now they've just had one of their most successful singles ever. So it's like, where do we see them going, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just pondering.
Yeah. That's why I think they're kind of experimenting here and just kind of, while they have the spotlight on them, let's try this. Let's see if it works. And I totally would not be surprised if this does kind of shoot up the charts just like Walk on Water. But when I was first listening to this song and I heard that verse, I was like, the EDM chorus is about to drop hardcore. I felt it, man, and I was ready for it, and then it didn't. And I was like, oh my gosh, what is going on? So you're right, this isn't your conventional top 40 song for top 40 radio in 2018, but I think there's a way for it to ride with the right push. So it'll be interesting to see over the next few months.
I just can't. I keep coming back to Taylor Swift, but think about Ready For It. You know, thump, thump, thump in the middle of the night. You know, and this is thump, thump, thump. What a dangerous night. You know, it's like, it's almost like I don't want to accuse the band of copying or anything, but similarities. But yeah,
sure.
We're way early out, but this just might be kind of fun to do. First week sales prediction for the record. I mean, it hasn't even been announced yet. Yeah, I know. But like, do you think you can, what do you think? What do you think, man?
So this is kind of tough when I'll throw out
a number first, okay, just to make it a little easier for you. I could see them doing 46,000 copies.
Okay. So this is tough because, like we mentioned before, not a lot of people in the current pop market and, you know, younger millennials are aware that 30 Seconds to Mars exists. You know, they have their large core fan base, which is very large. Yes. But as far as like the top 40 market goes, people are kind of like, who the hell's this band? Where did they come from? You know, it's kind of like Portugal the Man. We've known that band for over a decade, and they had a hit single, and everyone's like, who? You know, so I'm not sure how much the radio success will cross over into album sales. It's definitely going to be interesting to see, and we can use this as an experiment to see how an emo legacy band like 30 Seconds to Mars can do after they have mainstream success with a song. So I'm at 40,000, and I think that's
so we're close. Okay,
I'm at 40,000, but I think it might be a little high, but we'll have to see. It's hard to gauge how the success impact.
When you compare them to someone like Portugal the Man, you gotta think, you know, 30 Seconds to Mars were massive at one point,
for sure.
They have the Jared Leto, one of the most famous actors on the planet, is in their band going for them, you know, to make people aware of who they are. And they just, you know, they just had a number one. So it's, something's working. You know what I mean? Oh, and my last question for you is, do you like the song better than Walk on Water? Do you think this is a better song?
Yes, absolutely. I wasn't middle of the road on Walk on Water. I was kind of at a favorable 7 out of 10, but I wasn't quite there. And I could totally see this song growing even more on me as time goes on, but I think it could be better, but I think it's definitely better than Walk on Water, because like we said, that was a blatant cash grab at a sports anthem, and that kind of angle, kind of, you know, it's disingenuous towards the song as a whole. So to see this one just be released as is and almost as an experiment, it seems like it's cool.
Very cool. Yeah. I mean, I guess I could keep gushing about this song, but I'm just going to cut myself off.
I really like
this song, though, guys. I think you should listen to it. Tyler, do you have anything else you want to say about 30 Seconds to Mars? Other than the fact that it's good to have some of the OG emo kings back. Right?
Dashboard.
MCR dead. The Used are like off the grid playing fucking the Canyon full set shows, like, you know, at least we got one of them doing it right, you know.
Right.
Fall Out Boy falling apart out here, like
Dashboard in 30 Seconds, man. Those
Dashboard. Yeah, I want that Dashboard song to
it's
crack.
It's still hanging. We're
so
at,
bad.
We're
man.
At number 13.
I want it to crack. If we're in a world where Dangerous Night is number one on alt radio and We Fight by Dashboard is number two on alt radio. Things change. Things change. That's
I
the
hope
spark,
so,
man.
That's I dope. Hope so. We'll have to see.
Okay. Next story. Bless the Fall. Post-hardcore, metalcore, whatever you want to call them. They are kind of a mainstay, and they have signed to Rise Records. They've left their longtime label of Fearless Records, which is the label they were on forever. Before that, they were on Science Records, a label that totally tanked and went under. That's a whole research dive you can do if you feel like.
I think we need to do the Science Records cast, man.
The Science Records? Yeah, Science Records had it going on like 07, man.
They were a thing. Greeley and Bless the Fall.
Oh, dude, don't even get me started on Greeley Estates. We can do a Greeley Estates podcast. Love that band, man. Dude, yep. Shouts to y'all with the Vampire Squad, man. Come on. Shouts to the Vampire Squad, dude.
Yep. Good old days.
Absolutely, man. The band announced a new album, Hard Feelings. And along with that announcement and their signing to Rise Records, they put out a new song called Melodramatic. Tyler Sharp, have you had a chance to listen to Melodramatic? And if so, what are your thoughts?
I have. And first off, Melodramatic, melodrama, are we looking at Lord? That was the exact first thing that came to mind. And then...
yeah, too soon.
And then... you look at the album artwork, and it just screams 1975. Hello, what's going on here, Matt? All right. It's time to wave goodbye to metalcore, because this is just another band in a line of dominoes to go more rock than metalcore. The song itself, like, it's coherent.
Yo, man, I gotta ask, you think they got like a chocolate cover on here, like straight up? When I saw that cover art, like you said. I mean, we're talking, for those who haven't looked at it yet, pink neon sign that says, you know, the alt title. Yeah, it might as well say the 1975 on the cover. It's so ridiculous. But go ahead, Tyler. Sorry.
So the song isn't terrible, but it's so middle of the road that it really doesn't leave any impression. The chorus is just... it's just kind of there. It doesn't, the climax doesn't really reach to any point. We have this super shitty, like almost Beartooth breakdown in the bridge, and then it brings it back into a bad chorus. And I mean, I'll just say it, like, Bo's a pretty bad singer, and this band is so over though, it doesn't even matter. So you know, they've had much better clean leaning songs in the past, such as Hey Baby, Here's That Song Again, or Here's That Song You Wanted, whatever the hell it's called, and 40 Days.
Shouts to Westville and Snipes, wherever you are.
You know, shouts to 2010, man. Shouts to Witness, at least the first half of Witness. But this song is not going to get them anywhere. Unfortunately, and I will say that it's unfortunate, because I just want to see a scene band succeed, and this is, while it's coherent, it's just not good enough. It's too middle of the road. So I am at a 6 out of 10 for this song, and I cannot wait to hear what you have to say, Matt Crane.
I think this is pretty terrible, man. Okay. I really, really, really disliked this song. Like you said, it's so middle of the road that it just almost feels like a cardboard cutout or like styrofoam. Like there's nothing there. It's so middle of the road to me that it becomes terrible. Like, and what's, like you pointed out that Bo's not a very good singer. He used to be all right, remember? Like, he's doing something weird.
Hey baby,
he's doing
right?
something weird with his voice on this song. His voice is way toned down. You notice? It's almost like kind of going into raspy territory where, you know, he used to try to emulate Mabbit more and go for that high range, and he's not doing that. And it sounds so weird, and it kind of blends with the instrumentation, so his vocals don't really stand out from the instruments. And then it's like, at that point, what's the point of having a song? That was my biggest question coming out of this song, was why even make it? You know what I mean? Like, it's off tempo. The production, I thought, was bad too, which was surprising to me, because they've got some, I forget who's producing on the album, but there was somebody interesting.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, I think Telly from The Word Alive might be doing some production on this.
What?
And yeah.
Got to get that side hustle going on, because his band's over.
Ross Robinson.
Really?
Is produced, yeah. So they've got some help. So I was surprised at how bad the production sound on this song. That's my thought. I'm at a 3 out of 10 on this one. I will never turn it off.
Oh my God. I think you gave The Canyon a better rating than this.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, I don't know, it's like going to Walmart. That's what this song felt like to me. You know what I mean? Just,
I mean, Walmart's better than that new used album.
Yeah, man. I don't know, man. Wow. Yeah, this is a really, really bad song for me personally. You know, the other interesting part too is like, why sign to Rise over Fearless? What are you doing? Like, bad career move, bad move. Like, Fearless is at least like holding it together, you know. Pierce is still there. They've got I Prevail popping off. Rise, we've seen them, like, they're stumbling. Bands like Paris are kind of, Paris flopped. Crown the Empire are just fucking over. Of Mice and Men just flopped. Issues are fucking over. Like, Rise seemed to be like, they just lost their president, Craig, you know, the owner. They've lost the real visionary and talent behind the label. Rise seems like any day they could be liquidated into BMG. BMG is the major label that owns Rise that bought them a few years ago, if you didn't know that. Why sign to Rise at a time when Rise seemed to be failing? Like, what are you thinking about that, Tyler?
It makes absolutely no sense, but I kind of get it at the same rate. I mean, this band is obviously on the downswing, and I'm sure that their album contract just went out with Fearless. And I'm guessing the fact that they didn't re-sign with Fearless is that Fearless didn't offer a re-sign. So I'm thinking that Rise was just in their heads the next best option, but from what I've heard behind the scenes, and this is unconfirmed, so I don't know the specifics of what's going on, but Rise reportedly, supposedly, allegedly is slowly getting dissolved into BMG. So if down the road, supposedly there will be no more Rise, there's just going to be BMG and the rest of these artists, kind of like what Artery has done with Warner Brothers and what happened to all those bands. But
Except those bands got all dropped. Like,
exactly, like
shouts to
that's
Slave, shouts to JC, but
or not. But Bless the Fall signing to Rise in 2010 would have shut the scene down, man. It just doesn't matter now because this band doesn't matter. So that's what it comes down to. But could you imagine if they would have signed a Rise in 2010 off of Science for their comeback with Bo, after Craig left and all the drama
Or
and they
even, I
dropped,
mean, after Witness, like, made the
or
move.
after
Even that,
Witness,
it's still a hype,
but could you imagine hearing like God Wears Gucci on Rise Records channel in 2010, and then with all the Are they calling out the Devil Wears Prada? Is that, all that drama that went
know?
down with all
Yeah.
that? Man, good
I love
times.
that. I'll never forget the night God Wears Gucci dropped. I liked that
It was
song quite a
iconic.
bit.
It was iconic.
Witness, the first album with Bo, and Awakening both did around 10,000 copies first week. Their most successful album, I believe, still is His Last Walk, which sold over 100,000 copies total.
Right.
Hollow Bodies out of nowhere, which to me is when they got okay. I liked Witness as a record, but Hollow Awakening, I was kind of on. Hollow Bodies to me is where they got bad,
That was the end.
and that album did 20,000 copies first week, and it was like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? They popped off. They got really huge on that record. And it came out in 2013, and what I've always attributed the success of Hollow Bodies to is their friends. At that point, they were really tight with Vic Fuentes and Austin Carlisle and Kellen Quinn, and they just kind of snuck their way into the center of the scene's golden age, you know? Like, they just kind of snuck their way in there, and they were just synonymous with it. So I think just like a bunch of Pierce fans just like bought that record, you know?
Yeah, I remember seeing them perform like I don't it was 2013 or 2014, but it was on the
There's
Hollow
nothing
Body
good on that
cycle.
album.
No, it's pretty garbage, but it's crazy. I still see people ride for that album in the metalcore subreddit. They just had crazy Warped Tour hype on that cycle, and people were still riding for him, but it was obvious that on the next cycle it was, the downswing was here. So
I mean, Hollow Bodies, it was like the first time they were like, we're not going to be Bless the Fall anymore, we're just going to be a metalcore band, and we're going to use the
The most
same electronics
generic,
that were cool 3 years ago, you know what I mean? And it was like,
right. We are not going to
and it,
progress in any way.
so then the next album, those Left Behind, had a sales drop down to 16,000 copies, which I thought is a miracle because of how bad the record was that it even
Right.
sold that much, you know. But
Absolutely.
at this point, I'm thinking it's got to be all downhill from here, right? I mean, I see the next record, I'm thinking it's coming in around 7,000 copies, man.
Dude, even if they somehow by God's grace break even, that means they outsell Sleeping with Sirens of Mice
Yeah,
and
it's not
Men.
happening.
There's
It's n
no
there,
fucking
there's
way,
no way.
dude. There's no way. So yeah, I mean, it's gonna be under 10K. It has to be, right?
I feel pretty confident, like 7 to 8 I was gonna say 7 to 9, but no, 9's too high.
God, man.
9's too high,
this is
bro.
Just the disillusion of the scene,
yeah.
Man. It's fucking over.
They're gonna do like around 7K. They'll get chopped in half from 16K, and they'll be lucky for that, because they won't deserve it with songs like this.
Sure.
But you know what, man? His Last Walk with Craig Mabbitt will always be a classic record.
Forever
like, to
ride,
me,
man. Forever
it's
ride.
It's a front to back. Rise Up, Ahinya, Guys Like You, Message to the Unknown, Pray, Times Like These, Eyes Wide Shut, Black Rose Dying. I could go on. I fucking love that record, man.
I'll never forget the first time I heard Black Rose Dying, where Craig does that crazy scream and then he does an inhale into the mic.
The inhale, just like manic panic attack scream and the breakdown. Oh, so good.
And then the spoof Hyginia video that they did, where they all switched.
Oh, that was hilarious.
They all switched.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good times. That was back peak Bless the Fall, man, when the Guys Like You video had dropped and they were just the hottest fucking shit.
I'll
in
never
town.
Forget. Yeah. I went out. I bought that CD at Best Buy and I came home and I opened the lyric booklet and it had their promo from 2007 in there. And I was just like, holy shit, this is the coolest looking band I've seen since Under Oath,
Their promo photo, is that when Craig's got like the studded belt and the long hair? And
this was
Mike's wearing As Lay Dying shirt.
Yeah,
and, like,
so there was that one, and then there was one that was more of just like their upper bodies, and Craig's got on that super tight, like long sleeve black shirt.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, okay.
That one, yeah.
Yeah.
So I saw, this is how I heard about Bless the Fall. I was reading, like a young little teenager, I was reading the pages of Alternative Press magazine at Barnes & Noble. Did not buy it that day. Sorry, Mike Shea. Shouts to Mike, though. I was just reading at Barnes & Noble, and I turned the page, and I saw an advertisement with that promo picture of Bless the Fall for His Last Walk. And I just saw the picture of them, and I was like, that fucking band's awesome. I don't even care what they sound like.
Right?
I just saw the look, and I was like, I know what they sound like, and I'm in. And I went home, and I YouTubed the videos, and I was like, yep. I was in. But even Witness, man, I'll still ride for that record.
Dude,
really good.
The first
half
of that record is incredible.
What's Left of Me?
Yeah,
like, you
the
know
first
what I mean?
Half.
Yeah, that was a solid with Bo, like considering they lost Craig, or that they actually kicked Craig out. But, considering all that, like that was a hell of a record, they turned out.
Absolutely.
But everything after Witness, forget it. What's Left of Me, interestingly, went on to become the biggest song off that record.
Yep.
I think it holds the most streams. The music video, Bo's kind of, they're like, it's kind of a cold atmosphere. Like, they're wearing jackets and stuff. It's a really kind of iconic video at this point. That's like their most viewed video on YouTube. That song just took off.
Which is crazy because when the album came out, it was all God Wears Gucci. Like
yeah.
that was
and
the song.
Even before the album, it was all about To Hell and Back, because that came out as a demo originally, and people, that was the big thing, was like people were like, what are Bless the Fall gonna sound like without Craig? And they put out To Hell and Back, people were like, fuck yeah, we're in.
This
you know
is
what
it,
I mean
man, this
as
is
soon
it.
As they heard Jared do that scream on the intro, that long dragged out scream,
yeah,
and you got that guitar fingering going on underneath, it was like hell yeah.
And shouts to 2.0, man. One of the best metalcore intro songs, man.
Yeah.
That was it.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
But, yeah, man. So, what was I going to say?
It's a shame.
It is a shame. Because, what are we now? Bless the Fall 4.0, It's just, it really is over.
No 0.0, man. It's done. I will say... It was kind of interesting to see the old school cursive distress logo in neon.
Yeah.
And for a second, I was like, okay, that's a thing. I'm okay with that. And then I listened to the song and I was like, nope.
No, I just think about it. In three fucking albums, they haven't done a single goddamn creative thing.
Yeah.
Like, I think back to What's Left of Me. Think of that intro, that drum intro. That
right.
Were just the drums are just going and just pulling you into the song. And you're like, what?
It's like...
They used to be good at music.
What would happen if they released that song right now instead of the song that they did? I don't think it would pop off, but I think we'd be like, holy shit, this is fucking awesome.
Right. So yeah, so we were supposed to talk about the new Bless the Fall stuff, but we were so depressed by it, we went down a little nostalgia rabbit hole back to when this band was good. So hope you enjoyed that, listeners. Tyler, anything else you want to add to Bless the Fall?
I don't think so. Better days.
Okay.
That's what we got to think of.
Census Fail. the OGs, Let It Unfold You All the Way, have released a new song called New Jersey Makes the World Takes. It's from their upcoming album on Pure Noise Records, If There Is a Light, It Will Find You. This follows the singles Double Cross and Gold Jacket, which were also recently released. Tyler Sharp, what do you think of this song?
Despite what the band will tell you and what they say that this is off their new album, this is in fact off Life Is Not a Waiting Room. I'm always going to take this over Renaissance and Pull the Thorns bullshit, but Buddy lied to us, man. This is not what, quote, would have come between Let It Enfold You and Still Searching like he said it would. This is Safe Senses Fail with the middle of the road song from 2008. That's all this is. I'm at a 6 out of 10. I wanted so much more from this album, man, and it's not the return to form that I wanted. And I know we've talked about, you know, Buddy just can't do those right. type of vocals anymore, but I mean, this is a fucking pop punk song, man. They can still write post-hardcore instrumentals. Like, give it a shot. They're not even trying here. So that's where I'm at. Spiel over.
So I like the song. I like right. the little emo chime it's got going to it. I like the post-hardcore screams. Coming back to your point about this not being, you're right, it's not exactly what Buddy promised, but I feel his intention in the song. It's just he can't deliver what he promised. You know, yes, we're getting something closer to Life Is Not a Waiting Room, but maybe a little better. I just really appreciate this band being fun again and making songs like this. I really like Double Cross, the first single. And I think I like this one. I like this one a little better. There's a very old school Senses Fail riff going on in this song. Did you notice that? Like, it's something that you would have heard on Let It Unfold You.
But it's the so riff that buried because Buddy's melodies are so Life Is Not a Waiting Room, you know? Like, the riff may be 2004, but Buddy is stuck in 2008. And I think that's, like you said, it's as far back as he can go, and we gotta accept what we can get from them at this point.
It's the point. This is what he can do for us as far as fan service goes. And I just appreciate that he's doing it. But I like that. It's just, I like that very old school Senses Fail riff. It's so angsty. It felt angsty to me. So, you know, the song's not a home run, obviously. It's kind of like we're just kind of taking what we can get. I'm at a 6.9 out of 10 on the song, so we're not that far off. Do they have a shot?
Shot at what?
Can it matter? At mattering. No. You know what I mean?
This is fun. Buddy's doing this because he wants the band to live on at least a little longer, and the idea of this album is what Senses Fail fans want, and I think they're gonna be, you know, I think the majority of Senses Fail's fan base is gonna be like, okay, Buddy, thank you for trying. And that's the sentiment that this album is gonna get. It's not gonna, like, carry them to a new level or anything. Like, this band is certainly...
I hope if there is a mission, I hope it can get some old fans back on board at least. Because, you know, the last two records just scared their old fans away. Straight up. You know what I mean? They shook fans off like a wet dog shaking off water, you know, with those last two records. And hopefully these songs, old fans, fans like me, who are just kind of like, oh, okay, it's kind of nice to have Senses Fail being Senses Fail again. In my dream scenario, they get them back. They sell close to 10,000 first week. You know, they play House of Blues tours for the rest of their career, and they keep doing this, and I'm okay with it. I'll take it.
This is my least favorite single from the new album so far. They've released three.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I think this is my most. They put out another one, the Gold Jacket one. Gold Jacket is my least favorite.
Really?
My favorite, and Double Cross is my second favorite. Yeah.
I mean, Gold Jacket actually made me feel something. Sure, the lyrics are pretty, like, thematically it's pretty childish, but gets me kind of pumped in a way that 2000s post-hardcore used to, so I'll definitely take that over this one, but I'm glad you enjoy this one, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 6.9 out of 10.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I'm glad to have Senses Fail back. You know, I'm glad I'm not getting, you know, Renaissance. And that's where
absolutely.
I am with it.
Absolutely.
Okay, we got to get going, Todd Sharp, but real quick before we do, Water Parks dropped their new album, Entertainment, on Equal Vision. And I just want to know quickly, one sentence, what do you think of it, and what's your score? I'll do the same, and we'll get the hell out of here.
One word, tantrum. everyone who's listening to this podcast right now needs to go listen to this song. It is fantastic, and I can't believe I'm saying that about a water park song. This album is very interesting. It's all over the place, and I think that's its biggest default, but there's a lot of good to take away from it. This is a good water parks album, and it proves that this band can be great, and I can't believe I just said that, but go listen for yourself. This is a pop record. This is a post-hardcore record. This is a new neon pop punk record. It's all over the place. It's got shit for everyone. I'm at a 7 out of 10. What about you, Matt?
Okay, well, I guess since we're going to talk about it a little. And I had 11-11 was an optimistic to me but uninspiring opener, so it kind of like set me in this weird mood. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. I had some issues with the album. I think Austin's vocals are way too harmonized, like too many times on the record. I don't know why they're doing that. It annoys me. Good songs. Peach Lobotomy is a little Ashley Simpson core. I like that. I think Four Leaf Clover is just a really sweet song that I like. Not Warriors, we talked about that. Decent pop. We love Blonde. I actually really like the song Sleep Alone. It's kind of similar to Blonde, and it's kind of the right mix of aggression that they were going for on Blonde, like the mix of aggression and emo, and it feels a little neck deep to me, and I could just totally see it being this anthem for teens in love. You know, the lyric he has in it, loneliness was built for two, I think is a pretty compelling thing. And I just think Austin overall has a very compelling voice, a la emo on this record. Just the way he sings and his vowels and his pronunciation, the way he carries his words out, it's really smart. But with that said, it's just such a shame to me because there are so many misses on this record for me. And to me, it's like they're not that good at music yet. I am at a 6 out of 10 on the record.
Oh, holy shit. I gave it a better score than you did.
Where did this happen?
I don't even know what planet I'm on right now. I'm like the confused Mr. Krabs meme. Quick note about Austin. When Austin serves the song, he's fantastic. And if I could give any advice to any musician ever, it's whatever you're doing when writing a song, serve it. Mm-hmm. Don't play out of your ass. He does serve the song more times than not on this album, I believe. I think it's a better album than you do. So his problem is when he starts singing out of his ass with those like ADD kind of vocal techniques. And just like any member of a band, like you just have to play within your own boundaries. Like a drummer could technically just play a fill for an entire song and it would still quote unquote fit when it comes to music theory. Mm-hmm. But it's just ridiculous and no one does it. So Austin, less is more. And like I said, this is a good album. And Water Parks have the opportunity to actually be a great band in the future.
No, man, I mean, 7 out of 10, that's a good rating. Like, this band, that's your stamp. That's the Tyler Sharp stamp of approval, especially given to Water Parks. So, yep. Some misses for me. Rare, We Need to Talk, Crybaby were just total misses for me on this record. And to no one's surprise, Tantrum was a big miss for me on this album. And I know that was your favorite one. It just, you know, I feel like he tries the aggression and he misses totally on it. It just didn't work for me. Yeah.
I think you've never been more wrong. And I can't believe we're on this side of the fence on a water park song.
See, I really liked like Sleep Alone. I felt like that was the right amount of aggression for Water Parks. I just don't buy it on Tantrum. I guess Austin still needs to. It's not that Tantrum is a bad song. I just don't know that Austin pulls it off right. I just don't know that I buy it, you know? And after being burned by a couple of the songs before it, I was just like, I just don't know if I buy this kind of aggression.
I am completely 100% sold on it, but your apprehension is why it's a deep cut on the album and wasn't pushed as the lead single like I think it should have been. I mean, the verses in this song rip like no other. They just got super in-your-face riffs. The chorus is my only kind of caveat with it. It lacks. There's a lot of songs that are built like this, and it's just a personal bias that I have. Like, if you have a ripping verse, like my perfect example is Green Day's American Idiot. That song rips all the way through. It never lets up. This song lets up in the chorus, and a lot of alternative rock songs tend to do that, but everything is forgiven with this last verse, dude. It's a fucking call out track. Like, bands, take note. Don't be afraid to get piss. Everything is so safe now. And I mean, Austin just calls out, I don't know the situation. He obviously had a very bad breakup with his ex-girlfriend. And I'm just going to read off the last verse real quick. He says, "To a certain married mister that tried to move on my missus, Cam, try to come around again. You'll catch some swings and no misses. And to the rest, I'll keep them nameless. Nah, fuck it. Here we go. It's Richard and Clayton and John. Shit. Will. Yeah, y'all made it. And if I see you in person, I'm taking teeth. Trust, you earned this."
You know, the man is 4 feet tall and has purple hair. Hard for me to hear. Yeah, maybe that's it, you know? I don't know. But I gotta admit, I've only heard this record once. It just came out. So, you know, opinions could change. But yeah, I'm at a 6 out of 10, and it's like a 6.0 out of 10. Like, I could have given it a 5.9, but, you know.
Wow.
Well, we're here, and we've done this, you know, Mr. Editor.
I know.
First week sales prediction. Let's just knock it out. What do you think? Do you know what the last record did?
So the last record did, I believe, around 3,000.
Okay. I already know mine, so.
Okay.
You want me to go first?
So this is tough because I got to think in my head. I got to talk this one out. So this is tough because, as we've talked about on the show, anytime we talk about this band, there's a lot of false hype because they've just had the red carpet rolled out for them for no reason. I think their Twitter following and their personal social media engagement isn't necessarily accurate of the people who are going to buy this album and invest their time in this music. So I am going to say a safe 5,000.
Okay. I am at 9,000 copies.
Wow.
And I'm basing this on a lot of things I looked up, but just one of the big ones I'm going to throw out there is that they're at like 360,000 Spotify monthly listeners, which is much bigger than what Knuckle Puck are at. And Knuckle Puck sold around 9,000. So I think they at least have to be close to Knuckle Puck on this one.
I just don't know if that jump is possible for them at this point.
Yeah,
It'll be interesting. We'll have the numbers next week and we'll talk about them on the next episode.
All right. That Tyler Sharp likes the Water Parks album more than me. It's funny because there were times where I had to fight to get this band on the podcast. Tyler was like, "Man, I fucking get." There were times where Tyler and I both equally despised this band. And somehow they won me over, and somehow they won Tyler over a little bit, and now here we are. I'm a little disappointed, and Tyler's like all in. Interesting. You never know where you're going to end up in this scene.
Only on Note to the Scene, man. Only on note to scene.
All right. Well, that is it for the show this week. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you enjoy the show, please take the time to rate and or review us on Apple Podcasts. Give us those 5 stars, and we will love you. If you have a question for the show, which we will be getting back to listener questions next week, send them into notetoscene@gmail.com. All right. Peace out, everyone.